You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Sounds like writing on water. Thinking as just thinking. Writing on water that has some ripples and also is here and gone. Images and feelings and numbers writing on water. Ripples and also traceless. Letting it go, letting it be itself. Feelings in the body or heart or mind on this day of changing of schedule, changing of conditions, situation. Just meeting with friendly mind. Heat, pressure, shut down. Shakiness, happiness. Heaviness, lightness. Human appearances and experiences that we all have in common. And ground and air and breeze blowing through. Breath sweeping through. Deep okayness. Belonging in it all. In all that we can feel and see, and in the silence. any questions or anything to share, feel free to come close.
I've been with this thought a lot throughout the retreat. With the freedom of choice, how much there is very little freedom in this choice. This India travel did for me in many ways. Like a child in this huge supermarket, and you can get everything, but only one at a time. Mm-hmm. And inside this child wants everything now. Mm-hmm. And there's something that feels not willing to let go. And within this freedom, supposedly freedom of choice, there's a lot of suffering. Mm-hmm. There's very little freedom, actually, in this supposedly freedom of choice. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of thinking about destiny or God's will or everything happened as it should happen. But that's always been said in retrospect and never end. Never end now. Mm. And you come down to this freedom of choice. I'm not sure if there's a real big, there's a big question there. I'm not sure if I want to hear the answer.
Remember, there's only one answer. One right answer. Could you hear? Sort of? No? A question or interest around freedom of choice has been coming with him through the retreat. Being in India and, like, for him, like a child in a supermarket where there's everything one could want, but one can only have one at a time. And the child is like, no, I want it all now. And he's just reflecting on how little freedom seems to be in this seeming freedom of choice and how much suffering is in that. And then thoughts about destiny, etc., and that he doesn't want to hear. Conveniently for me. The answer. So we have here an invitation to an arranged marriage. All of you are invited to the engagement party tonight. This is true, it's not, it is possibly metaphorical as well. But speaking of destiny, at 7 p.m. in Adinamalai, next to the beautiful old temple, there, which is this side of the mountain, one of the members of the ashram Zulin family is getting married and his engagement party is here. And he would love for you to come. So speaking of destiny and whether there is any choice.
So we can
there are some studies about when we think we have choice. We're always sure that the other one might have been better. And when we think we don't have choice, or we think, well, let's say all these candies were different, and you had to choose one.
And then you give, you say, well, these are my top three, and you get your number three choice. Tomorrow you'll be, the mind apparently will be sure that number three was actually better than number two. Whereas if it's like, well, you haven't changed your mind. Come back. You'll always be sure that whatever you do. Anyone is from a family that had a very difficult situation, and the ashram has helped them. He and his sisters get a good job and get married. And Adi Anamalai is a really beautiful old temple on this side of the mountain of Arunachala. And it's just this side of that temple at 7 p.m. If you're going around the mountain, it's, you'll see, maybe in English, maybe not, Adi Anamalai. Anyway, if you're interested, then anyone in the ashram knows, etc.
And this is full-on party, right? Like
it's the
like,
engagement party.
Yeah.
The wedding is in a few days.
Oh.
In a few days.
The wedding.
Wedding.
Yeah. I think the wedding is the 22nd, maybe.
They have a brass band?
I'm sure they do.
No, seriously though, like how much was is a, of a party is the engagement versus the wedding? Like, is it going to be like crazy?
The wedding is, I guess, more than the engagement.
Okay.
But I don't know Tamil culture so well. So. I think it's all big party, big party, big party.
It's a party from here to the wedding.
I don't know. The one time I remember an engagement party here, the wedding was bigger. So we talked about the question of all this lying down is fine, but when you go to a retreat where there's not enough room to lie down, then what? So there's a few practical things about posture. There is also like the inner posture. And then there are also stretches that help. So I'm just going to do really practical run through. So mostly tips of what helped me and then what I've seen from other people. So if you like to sit in some version of cross-legged, most people need to sit higher than they do. And that, if you can see how that would then open this angle, so it's less of a stretch. When it's too much of a stretch for your body to be comfortable, then maybe your knee wouldn't be touching the ground, and so you bring the ground to your knee. So that again, the leg that is just getting stretched open isn't also supporting itself, and it can be more relaxed. So if your legs fall asleep, or one or both legs fall asleep, sitting cross-legged, supporting the knee and sitting higher, sometimes that's all you need to do. Okay, so you're really stable, you bring the ground to you if you don't get to the ground. The angle of the cushion you're sitting on, usually a little higher in the back and lower in the front helps. How hard is it, how soft is it, all of these things matter. And sometimes it's just that you think, posture, it's so superficial. And a little shift makes a huge difference, and then your body's really happy to be still. And one thing that can be nice is if you like to sit cross-legged, but if you sit cross-legged 3, 4, 5 times a day for 45 minutes to an hour each time, the pain start, or tiredness or whatever starts to irritability starts to build up, then it would be possible to alternate with kneeling, which sometimes is not quite as stable. This is a too high. Again, usually you need to be higher than, you think. But you want to have the weight is kind of not too much on your butt, not too much on your knees or legs. If you have any ankle issues, that what's under your ankles is appropriate, so soft enough. Not too soft, not too hard. The angle of this cushion makes a difference. And then the arms are usually a little bit like, okay, what about us? And because this may not quite be a good landing place, so you can make one. A little hammock for your hands. It helps a lot, try it. Okay, or you could always do some gentian. Christopher will let you do that. If sitting in a chair is good for you, either every time or alternating, then you still want your, whatever's on the ground is really supported on the ground. So you might need to bring the ground up to your feet if the chair is too high for you. And so you do. And you keep playing. And it's really cool because every little bit makes a huge difference. Like, that's too much for me. That's good. Oh. And you'll feel the ah. Oh. And the mm. But you'll also want to make that angle higher in the back, lower in the front, probably. So sometimes you'll get a little feeling of the hips are slightly forward or really up so that the belly relaxes. And then you start to feel that at least the possibility that your back could be happily up. And then the back. One of the main, I think, causes of back pain in sitting meditation is trying too hard. And you might not notice that there's like a slight pushing or leaning forward. But it's so helpful to play with that if you don't get too perfectionist about it. Just like, that's trying too hard. That's relaxing. That's allowing. That's being with. This is trying to get. So I'm even exaggerating the movement. It's sometimes hardly physical. There's some contraction right behind the heart, some between the shoulder blades, slightly pushing. So then, of course, because you're sitting up, it's much easier to be awake in that Western culture way of being awake, which is too awake, like on caffeine and insomniacs awake. And so there's likely to be more thinking, compulsive thinking, worry, anxiety, boundary issues. So how about coming down out of the head and being down in this bowl down here, or even in the feet, or the whole body? And just playing the same thing of how little effort is needed for the body to feel itself. And every little thing about every little posture makes a difference. So it is certainly different to sit up, to sit kneeling, to sit cross-legged. Oh yeah, there's one other. Sometimes this is a good one. And then you would need to be quite usually significantly higher. Okay?
I wonder if that one, do you need to balance it out at the end with the other side?
People would say everything would need to be balanced, and that's what we come to now, the stretching. Mm-hmm. So you could find that actually it doesn't work for you, it doesn't feel settled to do the other side for meditation. So you might sit that way while you're eating or something, or you might just do stretches that do the opposite. So one of the main issues for, this is another, the legs are, this is actually the most commonly helpful posture for sitting, okay? And again, you might need to help your knees reach the ground, and then your hips can relax. Okay? And what do you do with your hands? Extension. Okay. So stretching, the counter stretch to this is the happy cow. So instead of the hips open, the hips closed. But usually also some hip stretch. And then back of the leg stretch, especially for men. Bye. Safe travels. Lots of love. Thank you for being here. And one other one that's good for sitting is this. And especially if you're kind of stir around in there, getting in there, and then letting it come like an embryo, and then letting it sprout up. So that can help even on the same day, and it certainly can help in the long run. This one,
yeah.
Just for where we are getting so uptight,
yeah,
in our meditation.
Around
the shoulders and upper back and arms. So, and then also you never know, like if a teacher, if you ask, might let you lie down. I did hear someone just recently mention, so-and-so was lying down on that retreat with Christopher, so I thought maybe I could lie down for you, and yes, I could. The Jin Shin Jitsu that could help if you're sitting more than really works for you, holding the thumbs and also the inner ankles, helps harmonize that, the tendency of sitting to lead towards compulsive thinking and anxiety. And you're just likely to be more irritable, you're likely to have more negativity, you're likely to have more drama in the releasing and healing process. So you're just like, okay. If that's this kind of climate, sitting is like more likely to be like that. Not, it's of course a generalization. For some people, sitting is perfect posture. Okay? I would also, eventually what I came to was sometimes alternating doing my own yoga in the morning and doing Qigong in the evening. During the tea break on the Bodhgaya retreats, that was really good. Then it was fine. So coming out of retreat, there's just a few also very practical tips from experience that, so even if you've done lots of retreats, if you keep it close to you to remember that it's like fasting and coming off of a fast. So we've been fasting about words and interaction and dealing with other people and dealing with news and so on, dealing with culture. So Gautam's tips about communication, verbal communication, to really feel for where, when, with whom, and what are you talking and listening about. And there's some great research that, of course, is probably funded by some mainstream culture, so they have this metadata, so 40,000 plus people and their behavior, and to see what are the rhythms, like what's the emotional tone of conversations and communication. And they found that the morning hours are really good for being clear and upbeat and for focused work. And the afternoon, there's more negativity and stock prices are likely to get miscalculated, to be calculated, I don't even know the language, but to be like given a lower price than they would actually should have, and for people to not get the raise and that kind of thing in the afternoon. And then the evening again is more up energy and more creative. And I just, there's of course a book about it and everything. And perfect timing. And it's recommending like to CEOs, of course, that they would meet in the morning. And but what to do about all those afternoon hours? What's the solution? What do you think? The high tech solution for the professional?
Go to the mall, rest. Go to the mall and buy things.
To rest. Take a nap. Is the, after this huge study of 40,000 people, take a nap. Seriously. Yes. So napping can help all timing be perfect timing. So remembering to rest. And then remembering what rest is and does. So there's the way that by resting and letting go and letting life flow, that we could call it creative rest, like creativity happening by our getting out of the way. Realizing what is a priority, what isn't, the good idea of how and when to go about doing that. When to say what to whom, where, etc. But also the creative unrest, the restful unrest. So resting and getting into the flow and participating in the web of life. And then that feeling of, I think I've forgotten something. And that might just be that you're about to remember you have an arm, or you might start to remember you have a world that needs you. Something kind of waking up. It's not always comfortable. So it can feel like unrest, like in the poem. This is good, I will go to it, and then that old unease came back to him and called him to his hunches. So allowing that creative rest and creative unrest and restful action to start to come into the world of communication. And today, tomorrow, this week, less. So if you haven't been eating pizza all week and haven't been having 5 coffees a day all week, then maybe have 1 coffee today and not 5. And then tomorrow too, the next week, if you like. If you like. Giving yourself more time alone, more time in nature, more time in silence, and remembering when you're with people that you could always go away. I have to go to the bathroom. Or you could always ask them, how are you, and listen. Or you could ask them, what's important to you, and listen. And feel your feet while you're listening. And you thought it was loud out here. If you're going almost anywhere else in India, probably is a bit louder, a bit more stimulation. Feet, long out breath, feeling the seat, relaxing the seat, remembering a moment of feeling quiet or wholeness, or remembering that you're allowed to wish. May I be peaceful, may there be peace. Feeling my feet, may there be peace. This transition time is really rich, as in nature, the transition places between like field and the residential part of the ashram, between the ashram and the rock quarry, between the road. These edge places have the most going on. So we're in an edge place, metaphorically, towards the end of a retreat. And so there's a lot going on, and we can notice feeling freaked out, but still it's a good time to feel what's important to you. If you want to write a letter to yourself and then look at it next month, next retreat, whatever. And just really feeling how the shift into our openness and then the richness of the world and being in it and then being moved from there into life, action, speech, livelihood, and into silence, into meditation. And how life can find a way of leading that. And it's our attitude towards things that make them shallow or deep. Otherwise, it's just our own attitude that brings that. So if I have an attitude of wanting to talk about something deep, I'm probably sticking to something shallow. There's some avoidance of just being deep, for example. And then being in with whatever, listening to you tell me the same story again and again or whatever, having coffee, you asked me how I was. It can be deep. It can have, as you might have felt being here together, not speaking to each other, and yet sometimes such connection or love or appreciation, freedom to be ourselves. And also the chance sometimes to feel where there's a teaching by Trungpa that he talks about. You see someone approaching you and feeling what's starting to happen, and he says, don't freeze the space between. Someone's approaching you, don't freeze the space between you.
Is it approaching?
Coming towards you. They don't even need to be coming towards you. They could be not even seeing you and they're just walking in, but something might go towards freezing the space between. I'm afraid of you, or I want something from you, or whatever. And not freezing it, leaving, staying towards open, which might be like feet. May there be peace, may there be peace. And then, oh yes, slowing down, may there. And I just want to go back to the story of the first evening of the first full day of turquoise. Do you remember? And the instruction to keep her eyes like a hawk on the top of the hill. And what is that precision and continuity? What are we keeping the eyes on like a hawk? So the hawk that's however many hundreds of feet or meters or whatever up there and can see the tiniest blade of grass moving. What would be worthwhile to track? And what is that tracking that's not alarm? So just kind of the feeling of when sometimes we know it more culturally, at least when people talk about in sports being in the zone. So through action, falling into, in a way, non-action or flow. And then here we've had the chance to go more through less action, non-action, resting to where we feel so alive and so much energy, and some kind of flow can happen sometimes. So a one-pointed or staying focused and staying true to the flow rather than a thing. She was keeping her eyes on her inner voice, the talking bird in the cage there. Like keeping our eyes on our heart and not expecting that to be this one-pointed thing. We can be one-pointed, but it's with the stream. And it's the stream of the little bit that we know about what we feel inspired, what we find ourselves doing when we're in a flow. And we might know that we don't understand how this affects and in what way this is participating in the bigger picture. So the other day, there was the story, the Tibetan version of the story, where the Tibetans don't consider Gautam Buddha as being a normal human being. He's a supernatural person, or maybe not person. And so the story that he already knew what was going to happen, and he's just playing along, kind of. And the possibility of that part of us, let's say, that might know what's going to happen, speaking of predestination or choice, the part of us that could be tuned in to a wider picture, and we don't understand it in our way of participating, but we can be kind of tuned in into a harmony that we can feel that we're in harmony, and sometimes we get a glimpse of how that fits into the wider picture, how that fits into that so-called like knowing in advance. I think that at least experientially, it's not so much like knowing what the story is going to be, what the end of the story is, but having a sense for what, how the potential can emerge out of this same situation, and going with that potential emerging. There's a feeling of either trustworthiness or soundness, wholeness, wholesomeness, or best guess. None of the other seeming options make any sense. And so, against all odds, we. So I'd like to come into a circle. Yeah, we can fit.